To introduce our next panel, I'd like to welcome Ian Edmondson, the Director of the International Association of Event Hosts and also of Legacy Delivery, to introduce this next panel on measuring and evaluating the effects of hosting major events. We've heard a lot about the impacts and how you deliver impact. How you measure it is a very complex subject, but everybody's very, very keen to be able to do so. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. Thank you, everybody.
Good morning, everyone. Is that working okay? Am I coming through loud and clear? I'm sure they'll catch up. Oh, there we are. Morning, everyone. We have a great panel to hear from this morning for the next 40 minutes. We heard a lot yesterday. In fact, we've just had some more stats up on the screen this morning from Red Bull, and heard from some of the experts on fan engagement this morning on some of the benefits of hosting events and articulating numbers and value from events. We talked yesterday a little bit about big issues like the Calgary referendum on the Winter Games, a big mega event, and whether the public there felt that there was the value for investing in that big event. And there's the OECD talked about the recommendation that is now constituted in law, soft law, for 38 nation states about cities and hosts having a clear reason for hosting events and clearly articulating their economic, their social, and their environmental benefits and reasons for hosting major events alongside city plans and development plans. So it's a hot topic, and what we want to get on under the skin of this morning is how do we measure these benefits in a way that really demonstrates return on investment for people involved, the stakeholders involved in events. So can we trust these headline figures of economic benefit of, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of pounds? Are the media metrics of, you know, billions, millions of impressions and cumulative TV audiences, are they useful? Are they relevant to the investors of the major events? And do we have meaningful measures about social impact? We talked about the social good for human rights or for health and well-being of a nation, but can we really quantify that? So we have an esteemed panel here this morning. I'll just introduce them in order. We've got Frank Leenders from FIBA, the Director General of marketing, Media and Marketing Services at rights owner of an Olympic sport. So basketball, one of the premier Olympic sports. And, you know, so he's busy creating and making product and opportunity for people to take advantage of. To his right, we have Rebecca Redser from UK Sports, senior major events consultant. He's been part of the team for many years. And UK Sports are a national investor in sports events, a lot of experience in the UK and a lot of successful experiences to refer to. Next to Rebecca is Georg Spasier from Innsbruck Tyrol Sport. Georg will be impressed that I'm not just saying George. I normally get his name pronounced incorrectly, so hopefully that's right there, Georg. Georg comes from the experience of organising the Youth Olympic Games in Innsbruck in 2012, and since then, a number of other great events in a great city, and most recently the UCI Road Cycling World Championships in September this year. And in fact, he's just come back from his holiday, having invested a large proportion of his time in that event over the past few months. And finally, on his right, Asahi Takano from Porter's Consultant. He'll tell you a little bit more about the expertise and insight that Porter's provide for cities in particular, but for other investors as well, and give you a challenging view about taking a longer-term view and really understanding, getting under the skin of what makes a difference to populations. So I'll call you out now. Think of interesting, we'll have hopefully time for one or two interesting questions towards the end. So do give that some thought as we go along, and we'll come back to that. But in the meantime, I'll let everybody give their perspective and just say why you measure, why you evaluate events, and who you do it for. So, Frank, over to you.
Thank you, Ian. Good morning to all. I don't know if this... We can hear it? Okay. And thanks for the invite to be here today and be part of this interesting panel. I mean, it's our interest as a governing body to find, you know, good, motivated, interesting hosts for all our events. And I think that is not, you know, in a governing body, that's not only a World Cup or, let's say, a European Championship, which, you know, to a large extent sell themselves in the meantime, but it's also a lot of other continental competitions, youth competitions, other categories, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we realized that in order to be successful in that, we had to step up and to also be able to give ammunition very often to our regional offices and to our national federations, 213, so that they can have that discussion in a professional manner. And in a professional manner, not just showing a few nice pictures or a video and say, this is a fantastic event, you should host it, but to give more background to it, what the event is, what it does, and specifically what benefits it can bring to a host. So, you know, by taking that approach, we, you know, have started to work a lot with the regional offices and their through with national federations to give them that understanding, hopefully, and with that understanding also motivate them, these national federations, to find more different hosts, because we also realized that, you know, to a certain extent, for many of these events, the national federations were the key part, and often also, frankly speaking, the weakest link, because they needed to be aware, informed, equipped, and motivated. And you know, I think people will know it here. In many instances, a national federation is not a huge organization. It's often small organizations, and they have a lot of things to do. And you know, as I say, not many of them would say, "Okay, let's really actively go and find hosts in my country." So we found that very often it was the same members, the same countries, that would apply for hosting the event. And you know, we wanted to see a little bit more rotation for obvious reasons, but also for, you know, developing the sport. And in order to do that, we to come back to your question, we found out we needed to give them tools, we needed to give them an understanding, a template and data, which showed what FIBA events delivered to cities and provincial and national authorities in the past.
Great, thank you. We'll pick up on some of that, I'm sure. Rebecca, over to you from your perspective as a national investor.
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, so UK Sport, we're often known as the UK's performance sports body, but we do have a major events team as well. But we are funded by the UK government. So currently, where we're looking to measure and demonstrate value is against the wider sporting strategy of the UK government. If I think back to pre-2012 when I joined UK Sport, we were very much focused on delivering economic impact, some tourism benefit, but also, I think, preparation benefits for the games and getting the sports ready. But now we have a sports strategy which has five pillars. So as well as economic and physical activity, we're being asked to demonstrate how we're making a contribution to mental well-being, individual development, cohesion in communities, as well as the economic and tourist benefits that we've looked at before. So it's a challenge and an opportunity for us. We really do need to be able to demonstrate that value in order to give the government confidence that they should continue to invest in us to allow us to continue to invest in events. But whilst people do believe that sport has the opportunity to perhaps deliver on those wider benefits, whether that's health, transport. And I think yesterday actually it came up quite a bit, people talking about policy change, and actually when you've got the biggest events, actually making sure that that's trying to drive some kind of significant change in a community. That's fantastic when you've maybe got a mega event, but actually if you're an individual sport with a one-off championships, how do you demonstrate that you're contributing to that when it may be a small contribution, but a significant contribution to a bigger picture?
Great, thank you. Georg, obviously, well, you represent a city and a region, so there's sort of different boundaries and different pressures and priorities. And I know you had some challenges in the lead up to the Road World Championships this year, for example, which is a hugely disruptive event, a hugely impactful event because it closes roads and has a big impact on the population. So you had a journey of challenges going in the lead up to the event, and then you've just come out of that. So give us some of your perspective.
Yeah, I'm happy to be sort of on from the governmental level now on the more federal and city focused level. The UCI Road World Championships is definitely the largest sporting or summer event our region can host by its own. So we did, here and there, we did sort of, we noticed our boundaries, not only geographically, because we're settled in between the Alps, but we also had, or now in February, we've got the Nordic World Championships. So in the last 3 years, we had 6 World Championships. So at the moment, there's nearly a little feeling of saturation, how many events do we actually need? And it's always been very tourism-driven. All the decisions around acquiring and attracting new events. And there's been a switch, a strong switch from winter sports towards summer and especially towards biking. So we've been now measuring, of course, in different layers just to see what investing in, let's say, the Formula One of cycling has brought to the region. On the one side, we will get the beauty numbers from TV audiences, from online and international numbers. We've conducted an economic impact study, important for our politicians who've been up there backing the event, but also on a social and regional level, asking or trying to find out how this image has actually reached towards our inhabitants. And this will be, we will do a recall study on this next year to see how it has changed now after the event. So at the moment, I've got the feeling that all these numbers are great. It's always a perspective on angle and for which stakeholder, everybody needs different ones. So we understand the ones from the federations, then the government has got different. And now on the city level, not everybody living there actually needs to be promoted in all countries around the world, and so getting sort of one existing or one definition which would work for all these layers through all sports. It's obviously something we're working on in the Association of Event Hosts, and I think this is what should be the overall goal of all of us, because it varies from city to city and from country to country. So what are the numbers which are helpful for the next ones? And this is sort of the process we're in at the moment.
Great. Thank you, Georg. Asahi, I teed you up as giving a perspective which is slightly more analytical and thought through over a period of time. So I'll allow you to explain what you do and that in a little more detail.
Thanks, Ian. I think the word you used was challenging, so I'm going to take advantage of that. just very briefly, Porters Consulting. We are a management consulting company that is basically tried to take the blue chip management consulting approach you get from McKinsey and those kind of companies into the world of sport. And so we've been working in the sports sector for the last 12 years, specifically focusing on how we can harness the power of sport and physical activity for social good. Over the last that period, we've worked with endless governing bodies, I think 20 plus in the UK, focusing on participation strategies. We've worked with 5 plus national governments. And more recently, we've been working with city governments on helping with increasing participation. In this particular session, I think the angle that I would like to offer or bring is to say, with at least one specific bit of this very complex puzzle, which is the topic of how do you measure or how do you capture the impact on participation, so increasing physical activity or sports participation as a result of major events. I think the proposition is that we believe that we've now, in conjunction with 4 cities so far of London, Auckland, Singapore, and Stockholm, with hopefully many more to come, created a answer to be able to actually accurately put a number on that. However, I think the challenge component that I bring is to say it is a complex problem, and as a result, there is no simple solution. And I think what is actually needed is perhaps a mindset shift that says, are we actually willing as an industry now to invest and to actually take the longer-term view on making sure that we put all the systems in place that will allow us going into the future to measure these impacts, rather than come event by event looking to see if we can measure a post hoc quick and dirty number. So that kind of is a challenge, I guess, I'd like to bring to the room. Very happy to talk a little bit more later about the actual programme.
Thank you. Well, as I said before, do think of questions. I'll come back to you in a moment with any specific questions. But we've heard there's different variety of measures. There's different audiences that you want to do it for. How do you usefully turn some of the data that the individual specialists have? So, you know, Formula One would talk about the Azerbaijan Baku Grand Prix as 277 million increased economic value. The Nitro Circus yesterday, and Andy Hears again, you heard from this morning, had 44 million impressions from their events in Utah and Southern California. They're reaching big audiences. These are big numbers. You know, the Grand Prix in Mexico has $5.5 billion worth of media exposure, which is a massive number. How does that turn into being useful for decision-making that you individually want to have in the lead-up to an event or prior to an event, and how do you go about making data that is available in different sources useful for your audiences? So, Frank.
Yeah, I think you're hitting a very good point, because when you're doing this, of course, as a rights holder, you're selling your event, you're selling your property, and when you sell, you want to look good, you want to shine. I heard beauty numbers. I heard, and I think we're all, responsible for that. So obviously, we also like to go with our PwC report and saying the World Cup delivered 300 million economic impact, and the city name had media equivalent of 75 million and all these numbers. And there is an issue, and I know as organizers you're looking at trying to standardize this, because it's already, you're talking different languages, different methodologies, and everybody here in the room knows that if you change methodology on all these topics, because they're not exact sciences. I mean, you go to different entities, you go with different tweaks on take media equivalent. It's a typical case where you it's feel good, it's beauty to a large extent. But at the same time, as an as a rights holder, that is to a certain extent what you are forced to do. Because if Formula One goes with 3 billion and I come very modestly with an honest calculation of 3 million, then that may not look very attractive. That's the risk you take. You can be academically correct, but commercially you go nowhere. So that is the dilemma you're in. And I just want to say that in all of that matter, I mean, we stick basically to basics, because I'm impressed with also the participation and the social impact. We stick very much to the basics, specifically for our continental events, with economic impact, media exposure. I mean, some social impact, some legacy that there is for the sport. But it is also, as an organization, how much can you invest in this? Because I'm sure that in many of the organizations, there will be questions raised by a board. Do you need to spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 for an economic impact study? What does it do for you? How much more do you create with that? That's always what you will get. So it is really not easy to do this. And also in the context of the panel here before, the one with Stefan and the digital guys, it's becoming just more difficult, because in his old monopoly days of Stefan, I mean, you could go with your cumulative EBU numbers, and now you get this whole mix of the digital numbers, and it doesn't become easier. And you know, Stefan will say it's great that he still has the numbers. I don't know if he's still here, and it's correct. But when you start looking at some of the demographics of that, you know, that also raises questions.
Yeah. So, Rebecca, you talked about some of the changing priorities in the five different areas. There's a history of providing economic impact studies, and whether it's PwC or anybody else, and the question is, are they producing the right methodology behind it? Just they have a big consulting name behind it, but is it the right data? But the question for you a little bit is, are you doing social impact studies? Are you investing in that, like Frank said? Are you spending money to produce the science and the numbers behind that maybe takes a longer period of time, that you maybe don't know the proper outcomes until years after the event?
Yeah, and I mean, I think to take the economics, you're right. You know, and a number of people in this room have probably worked with us where we have got an agreed methodology in the UK now where you look at those building blocks, so you are more confident in the figures you're seeing. I think, you know, whenever you do see a shiny report and a big number, you really want to see the report. You're not just going to take the number, you know, and I think we've developed a level of sophistication and understanding in that that, you know, really helps us be able to look at that now. But also you've always got to think, that's what happened there. What does that mean for us here? So it's always important as well to look at the information that's in that report and then translate it into the event that you're trying to do. I think picking up on some of the points in the media as well, you know, it is more challenging now. It's not just about viewership. You're getting the social ones, but now it's like dwell time audience figures, and I think there is still work to be done in that, but we are starting to look into that and starting to look into some of the social impacts, but it is a challenge, and as you say, a lot of those social impacts are that longitudinal, and whilst we are a consistent investor in events, we're not investing in every event. You know, often the impact is on the city. That city will host multiple events, of maybe which we're involved in 2 out of 20. So how do we fit into a wider kind of research programme that sits for the city? You know, what is that baseline? How do you achieve, you know, how do you measure the change and the impact? But then also looking at something like participation, yes, you can run participation programmes, you can see how many people engage in them, you can track how many people, we've done quite a lot of studies looking into how many people are inspired to participate by an event. We know that events do have an inspirational impact, but that inspiration does kind of tail off quite quickly from the moment they leave that event, and that impact is felt and that inspiration is felt whether you're seeing it on television, it's felt more when you're seeing it in person. But actually, is it the event that's responsible for turning that inspiration into the participation? You know, where does that sit and who keeps measuring that? And we have done some small longitudinal studies which have shown that people who are inspired to participate after an event do keep up that participation, but we also know that those tend to be people who are already participating in some form, and that's an increased level of participation. And actually still the hardest to reach are those people who are not active at all and getting them into active. But you know, we have got limited resources, we've got lots of different things to measure, and you know, yeah, the cost of doing that on a longitudinal basis in a meaningful way is a real challenge.
Gail, I know you're doing some work now on the reputation of Innsbruck in terms of a cycling destination, and you won't know the results from that till next year in their entirety. Is that too late to be useful for you?
No, I mean, the question really is, for me, and listening to it again, is what are these numbers for, and what do they justify? Do they justify the investment in the sport? Do they justify the spending of public money? Do they justify the disturbances for the local population? And so on. So actually, Before the Road World Championships, the main discussion in media was only about budget and about the total traffic chaos which we're going to face. Now, after the event, everybody saw it wasn't a traffic chaos, and to be honest, nobody even asked or would have actually cared, is it now 12, 15 or 20 million, because they experienced the event, they saw how many people were there, and the narrative has completely changed. So it was hard work in being beaten up in the forehand, but it was so funny to see that the question didn't even come up one single time. Of course, we're going to present all these numbers in one nice package in 2 weeks at home. The overarching question for us as a destination is basically, yes, of course, we want to shift a little more from the winter sports to the summer sports. How well does the sport just fit in the long-term strategy of the destination? And there are some numbers who can be provided on how is the tourism around mountain biking and cycling in general developed, and how active have the Tyroleans or Innsbruck people become since the event, and so on. But this is just this will need a longer time to actually evaluate. Of course, the audience or at home, they want to have concrete numbers, and the politicians want to sell. Well, look, we only invested, let's say, 10 million, but got out 50 to 60 million. The tourism people want to say we had the busiest September in our history, and it has leveraged our efforts towards the mountain biking and cycling destination, and we've developed our offering towards tourism, So these are immediate numbers. These are immediate effects. But actually how well it has accelerated all these developments, that's going to be a longer looking into. Yeah.
Asahi, yep. Bring some more colour to...
Absolutely. Just in response to some of the points, I think there's clearly a debate around the value of the investment in, Frank, what you said in this kind of analysis, and equally Rebecca, the depth you go into and the time it takes to do it. I think as an industry, the challenge is, I think it's becoming evidently clear that especially the social and non-economic legacy to cities, it's the absolute business case that's increasingly being required to justify the events to happen. And we're seeing, obviously, bidding cities disappearing more and more. And for as long as we can't show that case to its citizens, the future of major events is unclear. So I think from that point of view, it's a necessity that we find a way to do this. Just to illustrate then of what we've done, just so if it triggers ideas on what it could do for others as well. The program we set up is called Active Citizens Worldwide. And we set out with the challenge to say, would it be possible using existing available data, big data, so censuses, major national activity surveys, facilities data, and so on, but using existing data to help a city understand three things. First of all, exactly what physical activity is happening in that city. So who is doing what, where, when, and how. Secondly, to understand exactly which interventions, i.e. facilities or open spaces or parks, programs, campaigns, events, are affecting the physical activity for whom, at what level, in what way. And thirdly, to put a number against that physical activity in terms of at least 7 to 9 different disease outcomes and the healthcare savings associated with that, a set of social outcomes associated with crime, with increased social cohesion, educational attainment improvement, and personal happiness, as well as the economic contribution associated with increased spending coming from participating in activity. Big challenge, but over the last year and a half, we've now completed this activity with 4 cities of London, Singapore, Auckland, and Stockholm. Now, if we now bring this into an events context, what does that mean? Well, for any of these cities, we can say, for example, that for a highly deprived area in a particular part of town with low activity levels, low health outcomes, and high social problems, we know that interventions specifically that are likely to move that particular group to become more active. And in London's case, for example, it became clearly evident that for those groups, it was access to public facilities was by far the most important thing. The implication for events then is as cities think about designing or bidding for events, it has the opportunity to start being slightly more tailored to say, I know we talk about white elephants of facilities, but actually for this particular demographic, a legacy of a facility that is publicly available is the most important thing, and so on. So that's one angle of how this can start to shape the event legacy. The second is by actually measuring the impact of the different interventions that happen as a result of the event. So the number of additional volunteers, the number of additional facilities, number of additional media campaigns, and so on. We can feed this into the model to actually come up with the outcome impact, the delta that this event has caused in terms of social outcomes, in terms of health outcomes, and so on and so forth. But the third and most important part for me, I guess, is the longitudinal piece, which everyone, I think, referred to. So this program's been set up for an annual measurement, ongoing, into perpetuity. So every single year this data is updated, and every single year the city can see what's changed. We also hope to increase the number of cities to 20, 30, 40, 50 cities so that we can start getting some real benchmarks and real cross-city picture of what's going on. But only in doing that will you be able to measure that impact of specific events in specific areas in an accurate way and see the longitudinal impact of that event. So what happens after 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years. But I think what we're trying to bring to the industry to say, it is possible. But as we said, it requires investment. It requires a concerted alignment of rights holders with the city government, with other parties. And I think the question is, how do we get everyone around the same table so that we can set this up for ideally every city in the world?
Thanks, Asahi. I think the nugget for all of us is if we can turn the language of the benefits that we all know that exists through events into meaningful ways of changing the delta, as you described it, for policymakers, so that can unlock expenditure, that can lock their investment and say, this is useful. We would like this event to help change the dial going forward. But the people that are on the host city side, like the national investors of events, the people that are interfacing with those policy, they're the ones that have got to find a way of unlocking health budgets, for example, in the Department of Health saying, well, actually, it's really good to have a sports event or even a cultural and arts event. And actually, we're prepared to invest because we can see it's going to change the delta, as it were. Questions. I've prompted you a couple of times. I'm really keen to see if we can get one or two questions from the audience before we move on. So you've obviously already answered all the questions, or people are too hungover from the fun and games last night. No? Yep, one over here. Have we got a microphone? There's a microphone here or here. Thanks, Olga.
Hi, thank you. Michelle from Visit Victoria. Something that we grapple with often is around the consistency of measurement of economic impact or brand. And, really the thoughts around, every event seems to use a different measure to give you the value to your event. How do you think you can achieve a more consistent approach?
It's almost like somebody planted that question in the audience. Thank you. Great question. Rebecca, you can step in on this one.
Yeah, I'll step in that one. So here in the UK, that was very much an issue that we found, and you were getting lots of different studies, and you just felt like you were looking at apples and pears, and you couldn't draw a consistent level of comparison between what one event was delivering in comparison to another. And a number of years ago, maybe six or seven now, even longer than that, apparently, we started working with all the home countries in the UK and a number of cities, including London, with Ian at the time. where we actually came together to look at all the different methodologies, agreed the principles that we felt were the key building blocks, and commissioned an organisation to help us build an online calculator, which we've put online. It's almost like an open source economic impacts calculator. You can find it at eventimpacts.com. And that is what we, so when we are now commissioning an economic impact study, it goes into the tender that they have to use the event impacts methodology. That methodology is freely available to them. But there is, as I mentioned, also an online calculator so that individual events can go on there, run a pre-event estimate, do it post-event as well. And we do know that that is actually accessed not just in the UK, but beyond as well. And so that is one area where we feel that we have kind of got a level of consistency out there. I think it's still evolving, and the next area of work we're looking at is, can we get that same common language around some of the more social impacts? And that's actually the next kind of phase of the work, which is happening now. And that's happening not just in the UK, but more internationally as well.
Yeah, so just picking up and referred to this as well, the International Association of Event Hosts that I participate in are working on a project that watch this space within the next 4 weeks. I went to Visit Victoria and members as well. So in the next 4 weeks before Christmas, we have committed to publishing on our website some standard language, standard common definitions about the language that goes into these reports. It will refer directly to the economic impact work and say that's a best practice example of the methodology applied to economic, but it will also refer to the terminology that you will hear in media evaluations and social evaluations as well. So at the moment, that will just be a glossary of terms, a set of common understanding. SportCal and SportCal GSI project have contributed towards that, and had an overarching piece of work with the International Federations over a number of years as well. So as an industry, we're taking that, doing a piece of work. It will be online and available to all in the next 4 weeks, as soon as Olga can press the go live button. And we've sort of got buy-in. We've got buy-in from the are in the process of getting buy-in from stakeholders as broad as the IOC, OECD, FIFA, some of the other federations. And it would just simply say, this is language that everybody recognises. What it won't do is get into the depths of the sort of analysis that will be required if you want to do the sorts of things that Asahi talked about. But over time, I think if the industry starts to build on some of that best practice and then layer in more and more common language, it's not going to happen overnight. We're not all suddenly going to, invest in the same thing through the same provider at one time. But I think over time, we've started to do it in the UK. That's not just the UK. Other countries, Stockholm and Sweden particularly, have done a lot of advanced work on this. So what we will be doing is sort of pooling that and making sure at least when somebody has a different terminology, like the Baku Grand Prix saying increased economic value, I've never heard increased economic value before as a terminology. I've heard of direct economic impact. I've heard of indirect and induced expenditure, but that particular term, I'm not quite sure what the methodology behind that one is. But what we will do is to start to demystify that and accept that, yes, there are very big high-profile figures, and yes, that has some value, but also there are terminology and things that are very relevant to very specific community benefits, social benefits at a local level, and that has value.
I think it's great as a rights holder, and that there is a common language and an attempt to do this. Maybe allow me also to be a little bit more challenging than to that whole movement, because it's not going to be the answer to everything. I believe why, because I mean we're talking about an initiative. I say with all respect from also cities and organizers and also what Asahi is doing, I think it's fascinating, but which are operating at a very high sophistication level. And the world is bigger than those four sophisticated cities and then also the people that are part of the initiative. But you have to start somewhere. That's number one. Secondly, I'm sure I'm not that familiar with the tool as you are, but the calculator can be great, but if you put rubbish in, you get rubbish out. I mean, so, I mean, where the numbers come from, I mean, they have to be accountable, and they have to be done also systematically and so on. And I know it is a more complex world. The other thing I want to say, and I don't know how the calculator takes that to in consideration, but, you know, what we say for our bigger event, like next year we have a World Cup in China, and we say that is not a two-week event in September, but it's a 500-day event. So we have had initiatives already from, you know, actually more than 2 years ago, and we are continuously having activities and events. So basically we are coming to the point, we say that when the event starts, it should already be a success. You know, it shouldn't depend on the event and the audiences of the event. That should be the cherry on the cake. But when we get there, the cities should already be satisfied, should already have had a lot of return, and also the CBA, the Basketball Association, should have had a lot of opportunities. What is for them the objective is to relaunch, or, you know, further popularize basketball in China, which is the number one sport, and the main objective is to defend that position against those people with a smaller ball.
I'm conscious that we've got to wrap up. So rather than giving everyone a final word, maybe we probably haven't got time for a final word. Ben, or do you want?
Yeah. After the morning break, if you'd like to
ask more questions.
Give a lightning talk or ask more questions.
Ben's keen to promote the lightning talk. 3 minute pitches that are happening later on this morning, so there's an opportunity to give your perspective on that as well. So without further ado, please show your appreciation for our panellists, Frank, Rebecca, Gay-Hawk and Asahi.